Get the answers you need now. Contact the show by calling 416-872-1010 or text 71010. You're listening to The Animal House with Dr. Clayton Greenway on News Talk 1010 Toronto. Animal House.
Welcome to Animal House. I'm your host, Dr. Clayton Greenway. This is the show where I invite you into my appointment room and take your questions about your pets. I've been practicing veterinary medicine for over 20 years in Toronto. I've completed advanced training in orthopedic surgery, emergency care procedures, and internal medicine in dogs and cats. So this hour is a great opportunity to get your pet vet questions answered. The phone lines are open, so give us a call. 416-872-1010 or text us at 71010. If you're calling long distance, 1-877-518-5151. But more importantly, I'm here to help you. I'll give you honest answers so you can make the best medical decisions for your pet. I love helping people who love their pets, so give me a call. We get lots of calls, but if you call in early, if you call in now, I can guarantee that I'll get to your question. The phone lines are open. 416-872-1010 or text us at 71010. And as always, I can promise my listeners one thing. If you care enough to call in, then I will care about your pet and give you the very best medicine I can deliver.
Now, what seems to be the problem? You can tell me. I'm a vet tuner.
All right. That's how we like to start the show. Okay. Some news came up. And I'm always surprised by this type of news. Here's the headline. Toronto Zoo says 3-year-old snow leopard is pregnant for the first time. You know, I know that people love animals, but when it's like pregnancy watch on a snow leopard and it's making the news, like all the media outlets are coming out with the report, I guess it's a feel-good, positive story, but it's always a little humorous to me. So here's the story. Officials announced that Jita, a nearly 3-year-old snow leopard, is pregnant. She was matched with the litter's father, 9-year-old Pemba, in February as part of a snow leopard preservation program. The zoo said typical snow leopard gestation lasts 90 to 110 days, which places Jita's likely birth window between May 6th and May 27th. All right, we got May babies coming. The zoo's wildlife health team says it is tracking the pregnancy using ultrasound, but Jita's fur is so thick and fluffy that the pictures aren't clear, so the number of cubs she has will be a surprise. Can't wait. First-time pregnancies inherently present challenges, especially with these large cats, since inexperienced mothers don't always know what to do. Oh my goodness. See, right there, they're shaming her as a new mother. That's not helpful for her state of mind as she enters this, okay? Additionally, although Pemba has sired prior litters, medical complications meant that none of his cubs survived. With this knowledge, the snow leopard care team is busy making preparations to ensure the best possible outcome regardless of the situation. Snow leopards are considered among the most elusive and beautiful big cats. They're native to the rugged mountain ranges of Central and South Asia, including the Himalayas. Snow leopards are listed as vulnerable by the International Union of Conservation of Nature. Their population is estimated to be between 4,000 and 6,500 individuals, but precise numbers are difficult to determine due to the secretive nature and remote habitat. Several conservation organizations, governments, and local communities are working to protect snow leopards and their habitats. So, big, big news. The snow leopard cheetah is pregnant, okay? And, you know, I can't help but think, Let's look at this. That's not great for us as taxpayers, okay? Because now we got a litter of kittens that that's gonna be on the take. We're all gonna have to take care of them. Aside from going and just staring at them, it's our tax dollars that you have to raise these cubs. And the other thing is these cubs, I mean, what future do they have, right? They're born in captivity. Basically, they're born in jail. So, and they what do they have to look forward to? They have to look forward to a lifetime of pacing back and forth with weirdos like us looking at them. And beyond that, being born like that, I've got a buddy who's a lifetime criminal. He's going to have a baby. I think that baby's going to be born on parole. And so same with these guys. They're right in the jailhouse. So that's putting a different take on it. But quite frankly, I worked at the Toronto Zoo before. I do love the fact that there are preservation programs and things like that that keep these species around. I know a lot of people have a concern with zoos and the captivity that happens with a lot of these amazing creatures that really are used to a wide geographic area or natural habitat that's very hard to reproduce. And quite frankly, I'll tell you, you know, for anybody who thinks that way out there, that, you know, zoos are not that great, that these creatures don't have, you know, their natural environment, there is something that zoos really do for us as people. And it's very important. And that's the fact that we, you know, the majority of people live in big urban centers. They don't get exposed to wildlife. And quite frankly, there's nothing like that connection that people can have when they interact with an animal. If people are not introduced to these species in some way, shape, or form, or don't create even a little personal connection by going to see them, by seeing how beautiful they are, you know, people, I think, would not be as motivated to save these species and to do right by them, and therefore, and in you know, subsequent to that, take care of the earth and habitats that are out there naturally. So that's a very positive thing that happens. Here's a good text. Are you really a vet? Your commentary calls that into question. I understand. I am a vet. I just have a bad sense of humor. Okay. Why don't you guys give me a call and we'll get back on track here. I'm here to answer your questions. 416-872-1010, and I will help you out. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Nancy. You've got an 11-year-old male American Eskimo cross. What's going on?
Hi. Yes. I had Presley to the vet, and blood work has been done, and things have come back where his calcium is high, his liver is a little high, cholesterol is high, and his lymph nodes at the front are a little bit are inflamed.
Okay.
There was talk about an ultrasound and x-rays, but the vet for now thought maybe just go a natural way with all those things, like a milk thistle, turmeric, but I think I'd like to know a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
going on.
I agree with you a little more. At 11 years old, you never know what can be happening. I mean, as we get a little older, there are diseases that can be more complicated. One of the things that's happening here is there's not a lot to go on from the blood work, and that happens often. It hasn't revealed a very specific process to be certain of.
No, it hasn't.
Right. And that's okay. It just means a little more investigation. Jumping to an ultrasound's expensive. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
When they felt the lymph nodes, could they feel them pretty easily?
Yes. At the front, on both sides.
Right. And were there any more comments about that from the vet as far as the lymph nodes are concerned?
No, just that she was concerned. And I should also mention, I'm not sure what's going on with the pancreas. She's a little worried about pancreatitis. And having a speck CPL.
Right, that's a more sensitive test for pancreatitis. The pancreas is a digestive organ. It gets inflamed. It can cause pain and vomiting, diarrhea, that sort of stuff. And it can be a bit serious, but it can usually clear up with treatment. So they're searching. They're searching. And that's one of the things. I agree with you. I think there needs to be a little bit more. What you really want is to try to determine exactly what's going on. Let me put this together with what you've seen. Elevation in calcium. Let me ask you,
I should also mention him drinking a lot more water. That's what took me to the vet.
Yeah, that's my questions were going to be about that. How is energy level and weight been over the last couple months?
Low.
Okay, yeah, we need to look at this a little closer. And one of the things that that causes an elevated calcium. And, you know, I'll give you some news that can concern you, but at the same time, it's not that bad. So calcium can go up when there's cancerous processes as well.
Yes. And you mentioned the word cancer.
Okay, and the lymph nodes, obviously, you know, one of the most common cancers that can happen, if the lymph nodes were enlarged, and the way you say it, it sounds like it was very easy for them to see and have a concern about. So there's a cancer called lymphoma that dogs get. It is very treatable. That's what I really want to say right off the bat. The way that you would diagnose that, it sounds like they haven't really told you this option, is they would collect a sample from the lymph nodes. You would take a needle and just poke it into the lymph nodes, spit it out on a slide. This is a really inexpensive test to send to the lab. I mean, it's when I say that, probably $150, something like that, but you get a clear answer as to what's going on inside the lymph nodes. And those are the things you can feel that are abnormal. So they could hold the answer as to what's happening. If it's lymphoma, you're going to know that pretty quickly.
Okay.
And lymphoma, you know, it will cause low energy. It can cause weight loss. It will cause excessive drinking and peeing.
Yeah.
So this is all starting to get consistent. The age is okay. The breed is okay for it. And I know that that's not amazing news, but what is really important is that you find out what's going on so you can formulate a plan.
Okay. So
yeah.
I'll ask her to do sort of like a biopsy.
It's called a lymph node aspirate. So a biopsy would be where they put them under sedation and cut a piece out. An aspirate is where you poke a needle in there, you kind of fan it in there, it takes all of about 10 seconds, and you get a really good sample of that lymph node, and there will be answers on that test. That is a heck of a lot cheaper than an ultrasound, and it can be done very quickly, and it's a great test as the next step just to pinpoint that. You've got to go to the source now and try to get an answer. I think you're in good shape, and let me just tell you, if it is lymphoma, that's a very treatable cancer in dogs, and it's not, you know, it's not going to break the bank. There's even a sort of cheap way to treat it that has quite good success. So I'll leave you with that. I hope things go well. I'm sure they will. And if it's something else, I'm sure you'll find that out too. Okay. For anybody else, no problem. Give us a call. 416-872-1010. You're listening to Animal House.
To interact with veterinarian and pet expert Dr. Clayton Greenway, send your text to 71010.
Welcome back to Animal House. We're having a good time this morning. I hope you are too, and thanks for coming along with us. If you've got a question for me, give me a call, 416-872-1010, and I will help you out. Let's get right back to the phones and go to... Oh, boy, this one might be a little tough. Hank, you've got Coco, a 7-year-old male Havanese. What's going on with Coco?
Well, he's a wonderful dog. And
They're all wonderful. Someone should get on the line and say, this dog is not wonderful. I'm sure he's wonderful.
We have a large backyard, and we have a large dog lives in another backyard that barks a lot. Anyway, our dog... In recent times, over the last 6 months, he goes out regularly and pees outside. Mm-hmm. But occasionally, he will come in the house and poop right after he's been outside. And we don't understand why he's not pooping outside.
Mm-hmm. And is this, you're talking about in the, what, the backyard or when there's a whole walk that happens?
No, in the backyard. When he frequently, when he goes on a walk, he poops on the walk.
Okay. And he's doing well otherwise. He hasn't had any poop issues, diarrhea, no medical issues that you've seen?
No, he's absolutely perfect. He's a rescue dog. He's perfect.
He's perfect. Okay. They're all rescues, really. They need a home somewhere. So the thing is, well, let me think. That's very odd that all of a sudden the behavior would change after many years, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, as you said, how old is he? 7 years old, and this has started happening 6 months ago. Why do you think it started?
The only thing I have is perhaps something is scaring him in the backyard, but...
I absolutely agree.
Other than the dog barking across the yard, we have the usual... animals in the neighborhood, a fox and skunks
right.
and stuff like that.
But. Right. So we have to kind of think about this, and we can't be certain. I always like to think about behavior problems as, you know, potential medical reasons, and getting an exam and stuff like that from your vet is great. In this case, I think the chance of it being anything medical is extremely low.
Yes.
So I think it really is a behavioral problem. I get the sense that maybe he was doing his business and got scared by something, and that something may or may not still be around. Could be the dog barking, could be gosh knows what, something painful that happened during it, and
yes.
he just related it to the outside. So how do we fix this? That's a good question when I think about that. Let me think. So my first instinct is, if you want to continue to keep using the backyard, you have to somehow remove that that trigger, that stimulus, right? So that might be putting a, you know, a little barrier up over, you know, outside the door, and basically create a little area that's a little more secure or private, almost like a dog cage. Did you ever crate train him when he was young?
No.
Okay. Something like that is possible, because a dog will feel more safe if they're in a smaller, sort of enclosed, if there's a wall there and stuff like that. All of a sudden, you know, as I say something like that, I feel a little ridiculous, because trying to create that just for the right, like a pooping box for your dog, is a little nuts.
Mm.
I think what you'll find is, so you go on walks through the front, on longer walks through the front door, and this doesn't happen, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, the alternative is obviously not to use the backyard, right? Or otherwise you're more prone to cleaning up a poop out there.
Yes.
But what I would do as well is, if you want to leave him out a little longer, try to create a little space where it might feel a little different than the backyard, but it's out there.
Yes.
I would definitely have some treats ready to go, because if he goes poop out there again, you want to blast a treat into him, and lots of praise and stuff like that, to reinvigorate the you know, the positive of actually defecating out there.
Good. Okay, that gives us some ideas for sure. Yeah.
So it now you've got a project. Right?
Yes.
And we all need projects. This one sounds a little odd, but that's possible. And otherwise, you know, look, you take him out the front door, and I think it'd be good to do that a lot until you create something, because you want to break this behavior. So the more you keep, you know, you keep using the backyard and he comes in and poops, the more ingrained that behavior is going to become.
Yes.
Okay. Good
okay,
luck
so
with
walk
it.
Him
I appreciate
a little more and leave him out longer. And
yeah, and if there's a way to take him outside the front quickly, and if that works too, then try to switch, because we don't want this behavior to continue. And after it's, you know, after you have it stopped, because you're taking them out the front for, like, you know, a month, let's do that for a month, you put them out in the backyard, maybe he won't do it again. Maybe it'll basically be enough time that he's kind of reverts back to being comfortable out there. Okay?
Thank you ever so
right.
much. That was excellent.
Thank you very much. Good luck, and have fun making a pooping box. Okay, let's get back to the calls. For anybody else, give us a call, 416-872-1010. I have never used the phrase pooping box before. That came out of nowhere. All right, let's go to Dawn. You're getting a new dog. What kind of dog are you getting?
Oh, it's John, by the way, Jay.
Oh, okay, John.
Nope.
All right.
I'm getting a golden doodle in the first week of June.
Terrific.
Yes, so we're excited. We're previous dog owners. We sadly just lost our Aussie doodle to Australian Shepherd, doodle to liver cancer after 15 years.
Oh,
firstly, just I've seen in the research, because we've been out of the puppying for about 15 years, the neutering, is it still 6 months? Excuse me, spaying. We're getting a female.
Yeah.
Is it still about 6 month period is recommended?
Yeah, I always, you know, I'm always sensitive about this, because I don't want to tell someone a very rigid answer with that. You've got
okay.
to kind of decide for yourself, because it's your dog. My job is to provide you with some information around it. So what I'll tell you is 6 months is what most vets recommend. The biggest reason is, medically speaking, every heat, the first few heats, with each successive heat from 0 up to 3, it increases their chance of getting mammary cancer later in life. And this
okay.
is... extremely well-known, extremely well-researched. Every veterinarian knows this study, and it's why 6 months is recommended. And so literally it goes from 0.008% of getting mammary cancer later, and three heats increase that to 26%. So okay. it's quite dramatic. So from a medical purpose, that's it. Breeders will give advice, things like, you know, let them get a little older, let them get more mature, let them go through a heat or two. You just got to ask them, you know, why would you want that to happen, right? And if you're considering breeding or things like that,
no,
this would be
won't.
So if it's medically based, that's reasonable information for going for 6 months. And if you agree, that's what I would recommend that you do. You also had a question about electrical fencing.
Yes, our last dog, we don't have we live in the suburbs, whatever, Etobicoke,
yep.
And we didn't have, when we purchased our home about 20 years ago, we didn't inherit any fencing in the backyard. We have great neighbors and everything. We have bushes. And in the front, too. So we chose to do a company that was great, electrical fence all the way around our property, which also didn't allow the spacing between the home for our previous dog to go from front to back because it was just too close and it wouldn't allow.
Okay.
So we
okay.
always knew if she was in the front or back. Our concern was we have a larger family in sense, just my family of four, but we go to a family cottage with other dogs. She tended not to get along with the other dogs. I mean, we did all the things that we should. She went to puppy school. We took her off leash if we could in her younger years. Anyway, she tended, and I don't know if this is an Australian Shepherd trait, but my long and short of it, you know, if I were doing yard work out front, and I've just been concerned over the time that if delivery people came by or dog walkers, they always knew, meaning the dog walkers
yeah.
in our community, that the dog
yeah.
wouldn't go anywhere. We have
sure.
the sign saying that. But we also wondered if this contributed to her, you know, protectiveness of her family, because again, the dogs at our cottage that she knew she didn't get along. Even one of them was her half
right.
sister from a previous
okay.
litter. So, just wondering, what is your
yeah.
opinion on you socialization know, and the fencing in the city?
Sure. I mean, that socialization and that interaction that your last dog had with the other dogs up at the cottage, I think there's lots of reasons for that. And that's not an uncommon behavior. I don't think it's probably related to the electrical fence. I'm also a little biased because I do really like electrical fencing. And
okay.
for everybody listening, I want them to know that, you know, electrical fencing is not about giving your dog a zap or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's they wear a collar, and with even just one episode, and let me just be specific. When we're talking about a zap or something, these collars, they usually have a range of power. And I mean, when we're talking about a zap, it's less pain than getting a mosquito bite. It just, the sensation is very different for them. And so they respond to it very significantly, not from a pain level, but from a, wow, there's something happened. And it did, that felt different than anything else. They don't really know why. It's not a terrorizing event. I never see behavior problems develop. But the thing is the collar beeps as well. And this is probably the case with your product, is if they get close to that line, it will beep first. And the dogs really, within usually minutes or an hour, understand this and actually know the limits of the fencing by sort of running around. And I think it's great. It gives you that opportunity to let them get that kind of exercise. I think they have a bit of command and control over their environment. I've always heard positive information.
Yeah. We again with our previous dog of 15 years, we loved it. That was her
yeah.
only fault, and I just
yeah, it's
to
great.
There was a
I love sure. it. I got to go to commercial break, but you
Thanks.
Said the company was great. I'm going to let you mention the name so people know.
Oh, it was Invisible Fence.
Okay, terrific. Yeah, they do
yeah.
a good job, and it's a great product.
Okay.
Thanks for the
Thank
information,
you.
And good luck with things. Okay, when we come back, more of your questions, give us a call, 416-872-1010. You're listening to Animal House.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Get the answers you need now. Contact the show by calling 416-872-1010 or text 71010. You're listening to The Animal House with Dr. Clayton Greenway on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
Welcome back to Animal House. Thanks for listening. As I always say, listen to the radio and then take the dog. for a walk. If you've got a question, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. I'm getting lots of text based off the commentary I had off the top about zoos and, you know, captivity and stuff. People are mentioning about Marineland that's opening soon. That always, I struggle a little bit with Marineland. I love the opportunity for families and especially children to have some meaningful interaction with these different types of species. I think it sets them up for, you know, being concerned about that and having some understanding of the importance of conserving, preserving areas of the earth, the habitat that they live in, and the species themselves. But Marineland, definitely, there's a lot of people who saw documentaries. And my biggest concern is these are such intelligent creatures. And boy, these tanks, I mean, just by nature of how large we can make them and the space that they have and things like that, these are not big environments for these animals that are usually used to traveling hundreds of miles with pods of, you know, other whales and, you know, dolphins. And dolphins are extremely intelligent. That one's tough for me. I can't say that I like that much, because I think it's too restrictive for them and their growth and their enjoyment out of life. No matter how much you engage them, I think they still don't get it. So there's a couple people who wanted me to mention about Marineland that it's opening, and there's some mixed feelings here coming through on the text messages. You have to decide for yourself. It sounds like they've gone through their issues, and the way it is now is they're here to stay. Just tough things to think about. As people, we can range on a spectrum of all of these things, from complete animal exploitation to all the way to animal rights. And usually people fall somewhere in that spectrum on different things across the world. You know, factory farming, cows, they're revered in India. We go through a lot of them here. You know, what does that mean? It's hard to really fall to understand how you feel about these different things. And a lot of people like to turn their head because it's, you know, not something they can necessarily change or do something about. But there usually always is something that you can do that can make you feel better. Anyways, let's get back to the calls. Maybe I should stick in that realm today. Give us a call, 416-872-1010, and I will help you out. Let's go to Norm. You've got Sparky and Patch. This doesn't sound very good. What happened here?
I saw the cats that I have, two of them, and they started to scratch and everything like that. I assumed that it was a flea spray that I got from a local store.
Yeah,
up north here. And I sprayed the one cat, and I did not spray the other cat at the same time, luckily, because I woke up the next morning and it burned their skin. The one skin right, not off of it, but certainly where the hair was and everything like that. I took it back to the store and said, hey, what's going on here? And they said, we don't know. Take it to take the money for it back again. And they gave me my money back. And okay. I really can't remember what I did from there. I think I went over to my veterinarian and got their spray.
Right.
I just don't want that to happen again with my two animals.
Okay. So let me let you know one or two things. This is not that unusual a story. And it's likely not a burn that happened. I don't know the product. I don't want you to mention the product just for that sake. But I'll give some general advice about this. I think it created a reaction there and probably ulcerated the skin, which would be very uncomfortable. And that that would be very bothersome to see, and it'd be irritating. It will resolve, but it doesn't fill you with a lot of confidence about products on the shelf. One of the reasons you could get that medication for your animal, your pet, over the counter without a prescription is because it is classified as a pesticide. Okay, that's different than the medications that are at the vet that you even apply to the skin. They're not classified as pesticides. They're pesticides are very basic, more basic chemical-based products that are, on the toxic range. You know, I'd probably have to be a chemistry prof to really understand this, but on the toxic range, they're a little higher. The products that come from the vet, and I'm not just being biased here, they're going to be a little bit more, they're going to be a little less toxic. They don't fall into that pesticide category. And to get out of that pesticide category, there's more research, there's more care, there's more safety involved in the product. So we do know that there's another product that's very common that people use that is a flea medication for dogs that you can get over the counter. And sometimes they apply it to cats. It creates huge problems with cats. They have seizures. They can die from it. And this routinely happens because of the confusion of here's flea medication and they don't notice that it's not for cats. And they're still allowed to keep that on the shelf. And that's a pesticide. So that's quite concerning. And so that's why I would talk to your vet and do that. You wouldn't, the thing that I hate is you're a good pet owner and, you know, you wouldn't know this, right? And the product looked fine. It tells you what to do. It also tells you that, you know, for a pesticide, there's not as much rigorous restriction of having that on the shelf somewhere. Right? The legalities of that, right? Because pesticides, as we know, are toxic. You're not supposed to contact them, all this stuff. And that's the category of drug that's happening. That's not the case with these products from the vet. They are antiparasitic, right? They're medically based. They're not pesticides for killing stuff. So there's differences in the chemistry.
I see. Is there one product that you, or two products that you might recommend from the vet? I guess.
I like that you said two products because I'm not supposed to just mention one. Because that's my licensing. There's so many products that it depends. They have coverage for other things. There's, you know, NexGard, Revolution. I guess NexGard's probably the more recent one. But if you were just looking for flea control, let me make sure I can think of two. There's Advantage and there's what would be another one. I never use any other ones. So I screwed up there and didn't mention two. But you can use a Revolution as well. It's similarly priced to Advantage and it covers for more stuff. And so what I like is having that discussion with the vet. And that's what vets should do is they should discuss what's the nature of your pet's environment, where do you spend time? And then they should recommend the product based on your pet, not a product that they just give to everyone who walks through the door. You know, have that conversation because our pets live in very different lives from other people. So, I mean, some go to cottages, some go to the States, some just walk on pavement, you know, or go to the little postage stamp size of grass down at the bottom of the condominium, right? So have that chat with your vet and those products will work fine.
Well, okay. You mentioned a couple of spots. Mine are up north here in North Country, and
sure.
They also go down south in the winter type of thing. So they're both ways, and
yeah,
I don't know where they pick it up. You know,
yeah. If you go over the border and down to the U.S., definitely, I'm a huge supporter of heartworm medication. Up here, we don't see. I just talked to a guy the other night, a vet the other night, and in all of his career, just like mine, he only saw heartworm once. I only saw it once. And yet we do this test and we give this medication endlessly. And in both of those cases, that pet was for a rescue from the south of the U.S. In the south. In his case, it was Texas. So it was brought up by there. But of course, with a dog bringing it up, that's a resource or a reservoir for heartworm up here. right? It just is really uncommon. If you never go south of the border, it's really uncommon to get heartworm. But what you just described, I'd be more worried about ticks. And it's a good conversation for everybody that's listening that's got to go through this right now, this time of year. The ticks are very serious. Lyme disease would be with your pet forever, and that's what ticks can, you know, pass on to our pets. And so tick control is really important. And there are the products there that that cover for that as well. Best thing to do is do it all in one product, and then you're not, you know, there's a lot of clinics that will sell you two, and it just really kind of jacks up the price, and yet, you know, one product can cover the spectrum. So I got to go to commercial break. I appreciate you asking about that, because I think it's good advice for anybody. When we come back, more of your questions.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa.
To interact with veterinarian and pet expert Dr. Clayton Greenway, send your text to 71010.
Welcome back to Animal House. Thanks for listening. I wouldn't be anywhere without my listeners. If you've got a question, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. There's some pretty cool questions here, actually. Let's start with a simple one, try to burn through a couple. Nancy, you've got 10-year-old Fluffy, a domestic longhair, and she's having hairballs.
Yes, good morning. I believe it's hairballs. He has this dry cough, and I've tried the paste on the paw, but he, to give him that for the feeding the hairballs, I don't want to say the name, but he vomits after that, not long after that. So I was wondering, can I give him a flaxseed oil or some fish oil, like from a health food store, mixed into his dry food? He only eats dry, to help with that? And if so, how much?
Right. I would do this. Off the top of my head, I wouldn't know a good hairball formulation just to tell you right now, but I would just look it up. You just go to Google, and there's some natural combinations. It will tell you exactly the amount and how much to give. So that's one way to go. But there are, this is one where you put it on the paw. I think I might know that product, and it's not good. There's one or two. The problem is I always recommend just one hairball product, and it's pretty much the only one I've ever used and been on the shelf, and it's great. It's you just swipe a finger amount of it, almost like the amount you put on your toothbrush of toothpaste, and you just swipe it in their mouth, and it works extremely well, and it's not expensive. I've never had a cat vomit from it, but I think the product you're talking about is a little bit more, there can be some extra ingredients in it that they can be sensitive to, so I think you'll easily find a natural product. If you ask me about, sure, the flaxseed oil, what you're talking about, that sounds reasonable. And I think about the same volume as the amount that you kind of put on your toothbrush. I know that's not very technical, but really they just need one swallow of it, and that's good enough. So you can try that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I did Google, like you said, and it just mentioned oil. It didn't say any specific oil, like, like an olive oil and no more than a teaspoon.
Yeah, I think, let me just tell you this. Whatever oil you use, coconut, flaxseed, things like that, take like a drip of it first and put it in their mouth, and just make sure that there's not excessive salivating, any reaction, anything like that, because you just never know if they have a sensitivity. It's like the mother that takes their, you know, two-year-old, three-year-old and drives to a hospital parking lot and then gives them a scoop of peanut butter, right, to try to figure out, and they're prepared and they're there outside the emergency room. That's getting excessive, but with kids, sure. I want you to do the same thing with whatever you're going to use if she's never been exposed to it before, or he.
Not on his food, not on his dry food.
Well, first, you can put it on his dry food, or you put it in his mouth, but start by giving one drip of it, right?
Okay.
Before you give a whole mouthful of it, because you never know. If there's a sensitivity, that's going to be an extremely irritating event and could be problematic. So I appreciate the call. Good luck with that. And let's go back to the phones. Give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Let's go to Yes, Kathy, you've got Tonka, 1-year-old husky Rottweiler. Yeah, the this is a great question. The Dewclaws.
German Shepherd, Super Mutt, and mostly husky.
All right, that's fine. He could be a Chihuahua. Same question. All right, nobody knows for sure. She's lying. He's definitely. It could be a kangaroo. I don't know. We're on the radio. But I like the question about the Dewclaws. So what question do you have?
The question is, he has two very loose dew claws on his back legs.
Yes.
Should they
yes.
be removed when he's under sedation next month when he gets neutered?
Yes, I would recommend that. I'll tell you why, and for anybody else. This is not a, you know, people hear the word declaw and they get very sensitive. This is not a declaw. When they have a dew claw, which is a little nail that is further up the leg, it often doesn't form a bony attachment, a cartilage and bone attachment. It's just dangling there by the skin. And basically, because of its location on each leg, these things get caught and traumatized all the time. And almost every dog that has them, they will have an event or two of this thing getting caught on something as they're running around and ripping the skin there. And so when they have their regular spay or neuter, it is optimal to just, I'm telling you, it takes 30 seconds to just whip a scalpel off of it. This is a useless little appendage that can only cause pain and problems and trauma to the dog later in life, and it will. And you just whip it off, you just put a couple stitches in, and it's a very reasonable additional fee. They're already under the anesthetic and having the nicely reduced fee. Still, these things are just crazy expensive, but a reduced fee of a spay and neuter. That is classic. That price is classically a little bit more controlled than regular surgeries and stuff like that. So as an add-on, it's really simple to deal with. So I'd recommend that you do it. Have you found the price of it?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
We were having a debate whether it should come off or not.
Yeah, I would recommend it because what's going to happen is that additional little fee to remove it is going to be cheaper than one time of it getting ripped and basically having to go to the vet, see the vet, them doing whatever to repair the area or the skin or give you a product for it. It's going to cost more doing that than the additional fee during the surgery to just whip these things off. They will get traumatized and they'll send you back into the vet again at some point.
Well, thank you for your expert opinion.
Expert, I always am sensitive about that. I don't like to think of myself as an expert. I like to think of myself as an idiot with a bad sense of humor.
Well, I think you're more of an expert than Google is, right?
Yeah. Well, I like to humanize it, and it helps make the decision, right? I mean, we're not, I think putting it in certain lights and particularly paying attention to the financial burden of all of this, I like to think in terms of that because we all have to a degree. I appreciate the comment.
Would affect his back legs or anything because they are loose. They're not tight against his legs.
No, I mean, this is an abnormality, right? Like this is an appendage that is not functional because the bones didn't create, and that's why they're loose and dangly. The skin is just keeping them there. Yeah, no problem. Okay, for anybody else, give us a call. 416-872-1010. We got time actually really just for one more call. Let's go Dahlia, you went to the vet and Dahlia's gone. Okay. Let's go to Vanda. You've got Astrid, 7-year-old Siberian Husky. Oh boy. She's starting to pee around the house.
No, so it's only when she sleeps. So at nighttime.
After gotcha.
When we wake up in the morning, and this is
there's pee on the bed where she slept.
Yes, and it's picked up her in the last like 6 to 8 months, but there was incidents starting about 3 years ago, so she was 4. But it was very sporadic. Every few months,
okay,
happened.
I got 45 seconds, and I'm going to tell you what to do with this, okay?
Okay.
And there's something important. So here's the thing. It's spay incontinence. So she was spayed. She doesn't have her ovaries. That produces estrogen. The estrogen that she lacks, which is fine, sensitizes the urinary sphincter to be stronger. So the fact that she doesn't have the estrogen, the urinary sphincter is looser, and so the urine just kind of leaks out when she's sleeping. There is a medication to give that's expensive. It's got a really long name. It's phenylpropanolamine, and I don't like that one because you got to give it three times a day, and it's really expensive, and blah blah blah. The product that I like is estrogen. It is incredibly cheap. You give it once a day for a certain amount of time, and you know, maybe you're doing it once a day for a couple days, and then it's once a week, and it is really cheap, and it works really well. It can have some side effects, but I've never seen them over the course of my entire career. That's the one to go with. I think that's
over the counter or prescription only.
It'll be prescription, just like any of them, unfortunately. Okay. But look, you can even talk about getting that at a drugstore. So that's the one to go with. Cheap, it's effective, and the people just don't recommend it. I prefer things that will be better for the clients. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I
okay.
want to recommend.
Thanks very much. The music's playing. I gotta go. Thanks for listening, everyone. Be good to your pets.
Dogs and cats living together.
Mass hysteria.